Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
Hey, what's going on? No Bad Dog Army, fired up as ever. Hope you guys are well. I've just been fired up, man. Ever since we got back from London, I'm like, man, I want to keep going bigger, bigger, bigger. We're about to hit the road on tour. I cannot wait to go on tour to meet some of you guys. Again, like, audit spots are available. You guys can come out. You can pay to watch me work. And we're doing a meet and greet every single venue from 5:30 to 6:30. Make sure you turn on your notifications on Instagram. I want you guys to come out. We got specific tour merch that only you can exclusively buy on this 2022 tour. And we got a bunch of new releases we're bringing on a tour, as well as equipment, leashes, obviously, you know, taking pictures of me, asking me dog training questions. I want as many people to come out to this tour. I know some of these dates are going to be in the middle of the week, so I know not everybody could come out. They got lives of their own, but I'd be really grateful and appreciative, and I'd love to meet you guys. This is literally, like, we're not making money on this tour. We've already scratched that. This is for me to come out to meet you guys. For years, it's been like, come here, come here, come there, come do this. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just go out. Let's hit the road. Let's take all of our workshop seminar money, dump it into a gigantic entertaining tour bus with five people on staff, and hit the road, create some good content, and meet the No Bad Dog Army. As always, I'm going to be answering your dog training questions at the end of this podcast, so make sure you guys leave a review. This is absolutely for free. I spent a lot of time editing and putting this out and doing the captions and doing everything. So do me a solid favor. If you guys have found this valuable, go over and leave a review wherever you listen to this. I would really appreciate it. Again, tour, courses, everything is in the description below. Can't wait to see you guys on the road. And let's get into the podcast.
I think I'm going to try to, I'm trying to write everything down as we go. Sure. Let me know how this usually works.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, that works fine. You can just let me know, you know, what's going on, the questions, concerns you have with your dog, and do my best to walk you through. Dogs. I'll do my best to walk you through what we need to do to get you guys in better shape.
Awesome. I appreciate it. This is a huge, huge opportunity. I've been following you for a few years now, and just have a huge admiration and appreciation for this. So I'm hoping we can do this, because, of course, I mean, we love our dogs. So, Max is a 3-year-old European Shepherd Bernese. He's been with us since he was a puppy, and he's our steady Eddie. He gets along with other dogs. He listens. He loves kids too much. We're always having to get him to, you know, back down, back off, because he'll just love him to death if he could.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. I can certainly work on his barking a bit, but, all in all, he's lovely. We rescued Buddy about a year and a half ago. He's been in our lives since he was a puppy, but, he was with, his owner, who, had brain cancer and could not handle, Buddy is an Aussie Shepherd, just a lot of energy. He's, you know, like all of them, he's a good dog, but he is reactive, and he is he'll we worked on kind of his herding instincts.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, we have grandkids and you know, other kids, small children around the house constantly, and if one's on the other side of like the sliding door, Buddy will actually like nip to towards their face. And we're working on it, but he will still do that occasionally. But the reason for my call is they just kind of out of the blue, and I know you'll argue that, and that's why I called.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the blue started fighting Max and Buddy. It started about 6 months ago. They were just, and I mean, we used to leave them alone all the time. You know, if we went out, we'd leave them in the house, or we'd leave them in the backyard. And they played really well. And one day they were playing, and somebody took it too far, and it escalated immediately into a scrap. Fortunately, both my husband and I were there, and we're able to pull him apart. But from that point, Buddy just kind of, I don't know, got this kind of loco thing.
Mm-hmm.
Max outweighs Buddy by over 10 pounds. Max is about 60-ish, and Buddy's just less than 50. Of course, Buddy's just kind of relentless. So that was the first one, and then it was like a good month and a half later, and I think it was maybe resource guarding at that time. You know, just someone wasn't letting up, and so they went at it again. It was like a month and a half before the next one, and I think that was resource guarding over food, because we do cooked in the morning and raw at night, and I mean, when it's raw, they, like Max especially, he doesn't resource guard anything, and he never has. But with raw, he has, and I think it was that time with that. So then the last two times, a week ago, had the family here, our grown kids, and they're young kids. Mm-hmm. And we're currently watching a dog for a friend. Everyone gets along with Charlie, and that's fine. My son's dog was also here, no problem. Just Max and Buddy got into a row over a toy, and it just escalated immediately. No signs that I could see, because it just happened so fast. So it wasn't, you know,
yep.
Like... shackles and tails and ears and licking and nothing like that. So they got into another row. Fortunately, we were here, got to pull them apart. And then from there, Max was just, he was skittish for days. The whale eyes, and he'd go in a corner, like facing the corner, away from everything and everyone. We all sleep together. The dogs sleep on our beds. And he was not coming on the bed, even to go out. If Buddy was in the area, he wanted to avoid it. But of course, I mean, he's got to go out. So I had to pretty much drag him out. So the last one was Saturday morning. I mean, everything's fine. My husband's coming up the stairs. You know, so we can have coffee together. And I mean, I don't even know what happened, but I think Buddy got into Max's face, and just that kind of excitement. Husband's coming up, they're happy, and they just went at it again. Well, both of us are there. I jumped up to grab Buddy. My husband grabs Max, and we were hard pressed to pull them apart. They were just adamant about going after each other. Finally pulled them apart, but kind of like the linesman at the hockey game, my husband just kind of released just enough for Max to go again. And he went after Buddy face actually punctured kind of the top of his head and just under his eye, big scratch. And it was like just the most vicious it's been. And so since Saturday morning, we've just kept them pretty much apart. We've let them just kind of be free at night when we go to bed, and it's worked so far. Other than that, we just keep them separate. One in one room, or one upstairs, one downstairs, or on a leash or what have you. I'll walk them. I'll walk them on leash, and they do well. But other than that, I mean, you know, nobody wants to live this way, and I don't know what to do. I don't trust them. My 83-year-old mom lives with us. Our young grandkids from 9 months to 5 years stay with us often. And I'm nervous, you know, it happening around them, or yeah. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. I understand. Sounds like it's a scary situation. I think it's all warranted as far as, you know, why it's scary. And, you know, I've had these situations happen before. I've seen it personally with friends' dogs, family members' dogs, clients' dogs. And typically it does create sometimes over food and value, which it sounds like the majority of the incidences, that's exactly what it is. There's either a toy involved, there's food involved, there's attention involved. It's you are getting close and impeding on something that I want, and I'm going to fight you over it. And so it's probably that. And I have found over time that once dogs kind of have this relationship with each other and they go after each other like this in a serious manner, I've never seen it flip back the other way, where it's never happened again. With that being said, I think a lot of your goal should be figuring out how to manage the situation, because it just sounds like to me you're not taking the proper precautions to make it as successful as it could be. It's kind of just this, hopefully it doesn't happen again, and if it does, we'll break it up. Like, I think that there's got to be a lot more structure involved in order for these guys to live with each other safely. Mm-hmm. And that's honestly the question at the end of the day, regardless of what you and I talk about for the next hour or whatever, is if you want to put in that work. That's really what it comes down to, because you're not going to flip a switch on these guys and all of a sudden that'll never happen again, or they're not whale-eyeing each other, or they're not looking for opportunities to fight. I think that that's always going to be part of what they're doing. You just have to decide, you know, how much management you want to do. And it sounds like you have a lot going on. Like, you have a lot of family in and out, friends, dogs, etc. And again, I think the real question is not going to have anything to do with the dogs. It's going to be on what you and your family want to do. That's just like a roll up of what I'm hearing. Does that make sense?
They were the best of friends. They played so well together. And then, kind of, you know, when you rescue a dog or adopt a dog, and it goes so well, you're like, bonus. We were thrilled.
Yeah. So let me just back up a little bit. Max is 3 years old now.
Correct.
And then Buddy is... What's that?
Buddy is... both dogs are neutered. Buddy is 2.
Okay. Yeah. So sometimes, too, maturity has... Okay, let me give you an example. I have seen this with my in-laws' dogs recently. And so they have been they basically are fostering a dog, and they have 2 personal dogs. And the dog that they're fostering in this personal dog had known each other since they were puppies. So the person that they're fostering for is a part of their family, right? So similar situation, and one day the dog that they're fostering turned and looked at one of their dogs and just attacked him randomly. Like there was nothing. He just attacked him. And they've basically been dealing with fights on and off now for 3 months now. I mean, every time that we go over, there's a new cut on one of the dogs and they're just getting into it. They just don't get along anymore. So I can tell you from personal experience firsthand, knowing that there's no real, other than normal pet stuff of probably just giving the dogs too much attention in the first place. But that's just what a lot of people do anyway. You know, I've just seen it. So it does happen. And I understand that it's frustrating and sad and all of that. But the reality is there's a lot of structure that is lacking. And so my point is who knows why it's happening? I don't know. But sometimes there's a maturity thing that happens too, where dogs hit a certain age. I've seen that with my personal dogs as well. I've said this many times before, but my St. Bernard, who passed away this last November, so almost a year now, next month, I had him since he was 12, or I'm sorry, I've had him, he lived until 12, I had him since he was a puppy, and he could be in doggy daycare up until about, he was like five or six, and then all of a sudden, a switch hit on, and he didn't like dogs anymore, and that was it. And it wasn't a training thing. It was probably a breed thing, maybe a genetics thing, maybe him being intact. I don't know. But my point is I'm telling you two situations of like my personal dog. I wasn't going to be like, oh, let's train this. Let's work on this. I knew that wasn't going to happen. He didn't like dogs. And for me to expose him to other dogs just on a limb is irresponsible and unfair and unethical to the other dog and my dog. So he was around other dogs for the next 6-7 years of his life, almost every day, but that was it. He was never going to be okay with dogs, but also there was a switch that just happened overnight. And I'm not going to sit here and try to ponder on why life does certain things to us, but it was an inconvenience, but that was about it. And then again, same thing with my in-laws' dogs. They've known each other since they were puppies. All of a sudden, boom. I don't know. Nobody knows. And but now they can be on and off. Like they can be next to each other. They can be in the house with each other. They can be left alone with each other. But there's just these random times where they just, maybe it's frustration, maybe it's jealousy, maybe it's both. So I've seen these things.
Because nobody wants their dogs to do that.
Right. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying is there's that's why I went directly for the real answer that I know that you're searching for, and it's like, what do you do? And I think again, management is something that you'll have to do in order for these guys to be successful. I'm gonna go over some managing expectations, realities, and some sort of what does that look like for you? But again, when just historically speaking, personally and with my clients' dogs, once dogs, it's the same thing with people. It's the same thing. I don't care how much therapy you do with each other or how much you spend time with each other. If somebody punches you in your nose and you're bleeding from your nose, your relationship with that person is different forever. You'll never get back that same relationship. I've had friends like that. Like, we just get into scuff, you know, when we were kids, and it's just how it is. It's just behavior, I think, in general. Like, you create a relationship with this person and you think this way about them. Same thing with dogs. I think they had a great relationship, and then all of a sudden one dog went after the other and now their relationship has changed. And I think, again, the biggest highlights from the things that you've told me were about some sort of resource. Does that make sense?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
What about trusting them moving forward? What am I,
What do you do? Yeah, so I think I would... You just see, I can tell by talking to you and like your personality, you seem like a very kind, welcome person that just wants, like, you know, like people, like we want things to just go right, and we assume that just things are going to work out because people and dogs are going to make the right decision, and you know, sometimes it doesn't. You just seem and sound like a very warm, inviting person, and I think very nurturing is what I'm hearing from you. And I think that if you don't kind of put your foot down and say like, hey, we got to make some changes around here, unless these guys aren't going to be able to live with each other safely, then you're going to be kind of walking on eggshells. And I just can't see you, like, you're not the type of personality that would do that. So, and I don't know you, I'm saying, like, this is what I'm reading from what you're, the way that we're talking now. I think you have a couple different options. I think there's the option of, there's two things, is I think that the Band-Aid could be ripped off by two ways. The first way is you start adding structure to these dogs' lives, which they probably don't have a lot of now. That's the first thing, is like, you're going to see incredible changes and differences in the dog's behavior once you do that. It's kind of like this, well, did you put gas in it? It's like, oh no, I forgot about that. For an engine type thing, it's like, that's like the number one thing when you have dogs that are starting, let's just say kids, right? Think about two kids that are starting to now really get aggressive with one another, two siblings. You know, they're just, you know, it's not an everyday thing, but they're starting to really fist fight each other, hurt each other. You really have to make sure as a parent or somebody in charge that you can say, when I'm, you know, when this isn't happening, you go over here, you go over here. And there isn't talking back, and there isn't fists continuing to be thrown, and we're not spitting across the room. It's, I respect the person that's telling me what to do more than I care about going after the other thing. Do you understand? So that's why a lot of people that don't have control, boundaries, foundation, even fear, there's this fear point of view in having a relationship with a dog that so many people are manipulated by marketing that you should never have, which is just manipulation. You know, it's like seeing a really good-looking cheeseburger from McDonald's when you're like, that's not good. We know that that's garbage. So fear, I use a lot of analogies, sorry, but fear is one of those things in the dog world that...
I get them all.
What's that?
I get them all.
Okay, cool.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay, so there's got to be this little like, oh, I don't want to get in trouble for mom or dad. Like, I don't want to get in trouble. Like, that's got to, that should exist in every healthy relationship, of like fear of getting in trouble, fear of letting down, etc. So you can start implementing that, which will create a great deal of control for you guys. And let me go over a scenario. Mm-hmm. So let's say... You know, we have two, okay, so we have two dogs. We have Max and Buddy, and you're bringing in another dog and a relative. So it's going to be kind of chaotic. It's going to be exciting. Max and Buddy are going to build with frustration depending on their environment. That doesn't necessarily mean physical environment of in the house, in the garage, in the yard, etc. It's the environment is pretty much anything around you. What you're smelling, what you're hearing, what you're seeing, etc. Like, everything is your environment. So if there's a lot of chaos going on, if there's excitement, if there's stimulation, and then there's not a lot of outlet, so dogs can get stimulated and they kind of build up like this pressure cooker. Think about that. Like, dogs' minds are kind of pressure cookers at some point when they're getting fed stimulation. They need to expend it. That's why dogs will... like grab toys and shake them up. Like, if somebody comes over to the house and your dog runs over and grabs the toy and shakes it up, they're releasing that energy. They're releasing that stimulation. They're building, 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 and then they're trying to release it. So my point is relative comes in, friend's dog comes in, it's exciting, and Max and Buddy are just roaming the house, getting excited, jumping, whining, spinning. That is that ticking time bomb that should never happen with these two, because the only way that they know to outlet some of this behavior is to go after each other, or one or the other, one will go after the other. And we see this a lot in the animal kingdom in general, behaviorally, like a lot of stimulation. There's too much stimulation going on. Monkeys will just rip each other's face off. Like, it's crazy how much stimulation goes into animals and what they do to outlet it with zero regard or consequences for what they do. And so if you have a very so let's just take example what you just said. Husband's coming up the stairs. The dogs are both excited. They're jumping up and down on their front tippy toes. We're talking to them. They're excited. When you see that, it should be Max, go to your bed. Buddy, go to your bed. Or Buddy, go to your crate. Or whatever it is. To take control over the situation to make sure that these two don't end up lighting each other on fire.
Indeed.
So there's two things with that. The biggest thing is, do you have the proper obedience to put on these dogs that are making these bad decisions? And then it's, are you understanding that doing these human-like things are creating these problems? And I know that you know these things, but I'm trying to put it in front of you so you're more mindful. It sounds like you've consumed some of my content, so you understand that the majority of dogs' problems are coming from their owners and the environments that they're setting them up in. And so when your husband's coming up the stairs and you're starting to see this excitement, instead of you going, like, because this is what humans do, is they see these dogs, we see our dogs get excited for us and it makes us feel good. And we want, like with babies, I just had a baby, right? So he's 13. So he's a little over 3 months. Thank you. Yeah, it's fun. But like any time that he looks at us and almost smiles, we're like gassing him up to smile. We're like, yeah. Like, who, you know, we're saying there's things coming out of our mouths that don't even make sense just to get him to smile because we want to see it because it's cute. Like it's almost selfish for us to do in a way, but not for him because he's a baby and smiling is not hurtful. But my point is for dogs, that's what we do sometimes, is we don't realize that, you know, like, oh, is that dad coming up the stairs? Like, what do we, you know, all of that stuff that we add on to get the dogs fired up and then they fight and then we're in tragedies mode. You have to, that can't exist anymore when they're together because you're just pumping that room up full of things that won't fit in that room and then it's just going to explode on each other. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense, but there's a question. Getting back to structure and control and foundation, if we have family and kids, et cetera, coming over, do we just preemptively, okay, go in your kennel until everyone goes away, or do you continue to, I don't know, test the water? Do you continue
that-
to... Do you?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And that's exactly what I'm saying is you have to want your dogs to succeed more than you want to see your dogs, like, see your friends. Like, it's like anything in life. Like, it's going to be a challenging thing, but you have to think in your head. So it's a great question. And I talk about this all the time. You have two dogs that are basically becoming frustrated with each other because of a resource. And that resource right now could be attention, food, etc., whatever. We don't know for sure, but it's definitely attention-based. And now they have tiffs. Now they have this one-up type thing. And you're about to have friends and family over, and things are going to get exciting. There's a lot of things in your head that you have to go through in a checklist. And that the two things that I just said, control, like, can you send your dog to an isolated place? And if the answer is no, then you have to make sure that your dogs are crated, or you have to make sure that your dogs are paying attention, or like, you have to set your dogs up for success. So if you're having these people over, you have to think in your mind, like, yeah, I want my dogs to see my family and I want my dogs to play with my friend's dogs, but it's going to cause more damage than good. So I'm going to, like, again, like, okay, Friday, my friends are coming over. I'm going to make sure Friday morning that me and my family have put in the proper exercise with these dogs to make sure that they can go and hang out in their crates or hang out in separate rooms together, hang out in the backyard, whatever. Like, that's what I mean is every family is different, but the principle and the ground rules are the same. So you just have to take those consider. Like for an example, yesterday it was raining yesterday morning here, and Lakota, my dog, wasn't going into work, which means she needed to be ran. That she's a dog that needs to be run. Some dogs need to be walked. Some dogs need to be run. Some dogs need to be mentally stimulated. I knew. I looked at the weather, and there was a break from the rain between like 10 and 11. So it stopped raining, and I'm like, this is my shot. I got to gas this dog out twice in this hour because it's going to rain for the rest of the day. It's a perfect example of I have people coming over. I'm going to go out, walk these dogs, work these dogs, train these dogs, do whatever I need to do to make it fair for them. It's 4:30. My guests are coming over at 5. We're going to put them in the crates. We're going to put them in the other room, and they're going to hang out separately, and then everything is successful. But some people can't do that. And that's where I'm telling you, like, if you physically, emotionally can't make that decision because we care so much to have our dogs involved, but it exposes a very high potential of dogs fighting, then it's better to just get rid of, rehome one of the dogs.
Yeah, believe you me, we've talked about that. And that's just, that part's not only heartbreaking, but for Buddy, for example, right? He's the one that we took on. I just, you know, rehoming him and then kind of passing on his behavior issues to someone else, that's not fair to anyone else or Buddy. So, yeah, and it's not like I guess it's just a question. I don't have a problem with kind of readjusting our parameters for them. I will ask, like, for example, with your in-laws' dogs, the one that's being fostered, going after just the one, it's just the one. What about that one? Has he changed? Like, has he changed toward the other dog? Because Max is never, like, he gets along with everybody.
Yeah.
We watch a lot of people's dogs, and he's just, you know, he's on his belly and or on his back, and he's just this fun-loving, goofy, amazing dog. And we've never seen kind of this side of him.
Yeah.
Is this him with potentially with every dog now? Because he's had that.
It could be, but it could be just the relationship had a falling out for whatever reason. I don't know, you know, but I will say that the dog that is getting pretty much attacked, you know, and I told my in-laws, I said, look, you don't have much more of these before the dog, just like you were saying, like the dog that's getting pretty much the short end of the stick here is the sweetest, nicest, friendliest, goofiest, fun dog ever. And I was saying, like, you're not going to have more opportunities of this happening without this dog having serious traumatic issues. Like that, like, because your dog is walking around, it's just like kids. And think about kids, like your kids walking around the house, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, your nephew or niece comes over and just beats the crap out of the other kid. And it's tragic for them. They're like, I thought that this was a safe place for me in my life, like to hang out in and to be happy and confident. And I didn't, you know, and especially with dogs, they didn't ask to be there. So over time, it could change the dog that's getting the short end of the stick. And, but again, like, that's what I mean is you have to, the management system is what I'm saying is, like, you're not doing any of that right now other than just making sure that they don't get into a fight. And if they do, you break it up. But there's got to be a lot more structure involved to make sure that they're successful. And that's just not existing right now. Like, I'd much rather have an obedient man eater than an out of control puppy. And I say that a lot, but it's because you can't do anything with an out-of-control, disobedient dog that loves everybody. You can't do anything. You can't walk them. You can't go anywhere because they're jumping and pulling, and they're eating things off the table, jumping on the table, pulling, scratching people's legs, like wrapping you around a pole. Like, it's a nightmare. But if you have a trained dog, it doesn't matter what their behavior is. If you can say sit, down, stay, heel, place, and they do it, and you advocate and control the dog's environment, you're good. You can have 10 dogs in a house that don't like each other at all, but they listen to you. And then, like, see, here's the thing. Let me explain something to you that I think will be helpful. So there's a significant difference between pet owners, like average dog owners, and people who work with dogs professionally or working handler dogs or people who have working dogs. There's a significant difference in the mindset. There's a significant difference in how they live their lives in their ecosystem and their culture. And there's a significant difference with how the dogs are trained. So a working dog could be anything from a lab that's sniffing bombs at LaGuardia Airport, or it could be a Belgian Malinois that is doing apprehension work and dragging bad guys out of a car. But their systems and their control and their lifestyle is a lot different. So again, like if I had like four Malinois that are all working, they were in competitive sport work, or they were in sport work, or they were in bite work, or they were in police work, whatever. And I've raised police dogs and I've raised bite dogs. I've dabbled in a little bit of everything, right? So their handling is going to be different. So pet dogs are like, I love you, I want a dog in my life. And they're roaming the house and they just have a different life. Working dogs are dogs who, if left unattended or left with just making whatever decisions they want to make, are going to get into a fight because they're more aggressive naturally, because maybe they're not fixed, or maybe they just have a lot of drive, or maybe they're not socialized, or maybe whatever, and they're crated. So if I had four dogs and they were all working dogs, in the morning, it may be a rotation of three out of four dogs don't get along. So one dog is, I have to wake up extra early to get one dog out, run that dog, put that dog away, breakfast, fresh water. Second dog, same thing. And that's just the lifestyle that we live. And then maybe one day I go to work and work on one thing with one dog, or the next day or whatever. And they're in a crate and rotate situation. Now, I'm not saying that that's what you need to do, but I'm just saying, like, there's so many people out there that are working dog handlers that raise dogs like they are like tools, right? They go back into the toolbox at night to charge, and in the morning they go out to the garage, they take them off the dock, and they put them in their toolbox, and they go to work or whatever. So it's important for you to understand that this may be drastic for you, but understand that there's many people out there that live their lives like this every single day, which means if I have a working dog, and they're not like Lakota, for an example, is a perfect example of this. My Dutch Shepherd, she's going to be 7 this year. She is from a working line gene pool, which means she has a lot of drive. She's very intense. And when I have people over, she can be a pet to some degree, which means there's a dog around the house that gets excited to see you, but she's not going to go hang out on the couch and put her head on you and say like, hey, let's just hang out here. So when I have somebody that comes over and she gets excited, I may let her greet that person for 10 seconds, but then her tail is going and she's knocking every single drink over off the table. She is harassing you to go out to play Chuck It. She is pushing you to the back door, the side door, the front door to try to go out and play. And she's constantly looking at you, like pushing a toy at you. And then I would say, go to your touch and lay down. So my point is like, you have to have that balance of control if you're going to have a dog that may make less than optimal decisions. And it doesn't always mean aggression. Like Lakota, my dog is not aggressive. But I have to have a pretty good control over her because she's so intense. And you have two dogs that are starting to not like each other, or one or the other is not liking each other. So you have to have the direct control to say, this is a stimulating situation. Like you said, like we're feeding raw at night and they're both like sitting, drooling, hopping up and down, spinning, getting excited. And as that's building, one may look at the other and then boom. Or like you said, there's the toy out And one's, like you said, like, oh, all of a sudden, one of them was playing with a toy and the other one went up and nailed him, or whatever the context was, something like that. And I would start eliminating these possibilities. Like, if you can look at a situation and say, this could be a flip of a coin, 50-50, don't do it. Do not put yourself in that situation. And then also make sure that if you're about to feed them, your friends are coming over, another dog's going to be around, your husband's coming home, whatever, that you can say, Max, go to your touch, Buddy, go to your touch, and you can control that environment. Because right now it's a free-for-all.
Yeah, that honestly, like, we, you know, they do the sit and calm and all that before they eat. They're in the same room but separate. Mm-hmm. I just honestly thought we were doing the right things.
You probably are, but I want to explain a very important thing. There's a difference between getting your dog into a routine and asking your dog to do something out of context and them doing it, which means some dog owners, like what you just said, is we have this routine where the food bowls come out or the whatever the dog is conditioned to say, hey, it's dinner time. They may do something, right? And they may go to their beds or they may go to their crates or they may do this, and that's great. That's cool. Good job. But if one of them, like say you drop the spoon that you feed the raw out of or whatever, and then one of them gets up, goes, ooh, you know, I'm going to lick the spoon like I did when I was a kid with the cookie batter or cookie dough or whatever, right? It's like, oh, cool. So one dog then goes after the spoon, or say you dropped, you know, a piece of raw, whatever. This is my point, is unless you can say, get your butt back there, you know better, with definition of like the dog's like, oh crap, boom, they go back. That's where you're going to start running into some problems, is they're like, hey, because it's a transaction for them. They're like, hey, we're going to go. And that's the problem with having a one-way street in a transactional relationship or a positive-only relationship. A positive-only relationship is a transactional relationship. Is I do something for you, you pay me. Outside of work, we're not buddies. We're not friends. I don't respect you. I don't listen to you. So if you put a dog into a place because they know they're about to get paid with raw organs and they're doing that because of that, that's good. My dog will do the same. My food bowl comes out. She runs to her crate. She pitter-patters in there and waits. I taught her that. I conditioned her that. That's where I want her to eat her dead stuff. I don't want her around my house doing that. Cool. But you have to make sure that if out of context, say, something happens, you need to be able to say, nope, right back. Like, I can recall my dog out of her crate. She'll come to me. I'll send her to her place, which is a different touch. I'll recall her back. I'll send her to her crate. I'll have her go to her touch, back to me, back to the crate, and feed her. I can do everything out of context. And I find that dog owners who do this circus of conditioning, like if your dogs go do that routine and then you were like, come down, sit, stay, they would be like, that's, what's that? Well, I'm not sure of that. And that's what I want you to understand, is you got to have more control individually.
Got it.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
Because again, let's say you're getting ready to feed. Your husband walks to the door. They're like, oh, this whole environment just got so much better. Dad's here. We're getting fed. Dad's here. And then they start jumping. Your husband's, hey, guys, how are you? And then they get excited. And then they start looking at each other. And then you go, Max, go to your place. Max is like, don't tell me what to do because I'm about to beat this crap out of Buddy, or vice versa. That those are the types of situations that you need that extra, you know, enforcement to make sure that no. That's what I mean by structure and control. I don't think that you have to live this one end, you know, one dog at one end, one dog at the other end. From what you've told me, it seems like 80% of the fights that they've had have been to overstimulation and some sort of value involved, or both. Which to me, as somebody who specializes in behavior, canine education, and human education and coaching for canines, that is like all 80% of that is 100% avoidable. Because I'm like, hey, I have two dogs that are going to have a problem with all of this stimulation going on. So you're going to go to your crate. You're going to go to your bed. Or, hey, we're creating too much stimulation for these dogs at night by the bed, by the door, on the stairs, like wherever these tight spaces are. And that's where we're going to get this wet, like, it's this hockey fight type of thing. I know you referenced some sort of sport earlier. So it's this hockey type mentality where they just drop the gloves and go. And you're like, where do these guys come from? And all of a sudden there's sticks and helmets and things all over the ice. And you're like, I didn't even see this coming. What happened? So it's the same thing that they're on the same level. You're a human. You're not. So you're not probably seeing every little, you know, little kind of like middle finger that they're giving each other potentially. And of course your other dog's just trying to, like, whoever's the antagonist here, the other dog that's getting the short end of the stick is just trying to be a dog that lives with you. And it's not fair to continue to expose them to basically a bully that just pulverizes the other dog whenever they get excited. So you have to have that very strict balance. And it's the only way to make it fair for the dog that's getting the short end of the stick is to make sure that you can control situations. And if that means changing your lifestyle and changing your routine, again, that's what I was saying in the beginning. That's a decision. That's a lifestyle decision that you and your family are going to have to think. Some people can't, they just can't. And some people can, because they know that the outcome is the dog that really is just trying to live their life in your house happily is getting pulverized every 3 weeks. So I just, you know, to me, whenever I do these, you know, whether it's in person, on the phone, whatever, you just have to be fair and realistic. And sometimes dog owners, you know, they're like, oh, you know, it's not that bad or whatever. It's just, you have to understand is like every little situation that you put your dogs into that can be kind of hairy will likely because you're putting them in that. Like, you're either enabling and allowing them to be in that situation, or you're putting them in that situation. Two examples are, we have a friend's dog coming over, both dogs are off leash, free range of the house, friend's dog comes into the house, both dogs dart to that dog to smell them, to sniff them, to say what's up. Now you have two dogs that have this spatial frustration relationship, both touching noses to this other dog. Like, you're just waiting for them, boom, done. Then it's a fight. Same thing at night. Like, we're going to put both dogs on a, it doesn't matter if you have a California King, like, we're going to put both dogs on the same level, sleeping 3 feet away from each other, and they have a problem with each other. Like, those, and even like the whole nighttime routine, that whole thing that every family has of like getting them up the stairs, getting excited, time for bed, talking to them, creating that excitement, creating that stimulation, that is going, like, where are they going to dump that? Like, you're unloading, like, it's basically like filling somebody's jar up of water. Like, where are they going to put that once you fill it out of your, you know? Do you know what I'm, does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. So again, some people are like, but I love my dogs and this is how I am. And I don't think I'm going to be able to change. And I'm like, cool. That's great. I'm glad that you're honest with yourself. Now what you have to do is all you have to do is just say, like, these dogs are not going to fit. One of these dogs is going to get the short end of the stick because of how I raise my dogs. And that's the same conversation I had with my in-laws. I'm like, hey, you can't, you know, come in and go, hey, how are you? Where are you? Where's my dogs? Where's my babies? I love you so much. Because there's going to be conflict between those two dogs. And if you guys can't change, then this isn't a fair environment for the dogs that that's getting his ass kicked, basically. But again, that's like, let's rewind 50 minutes ago to the first thing I said to you of, this is more of what you guys are going to be comfortable with doing realistically. Because I think if you did like a crate and rotate, super control, quit the BS, correcting them when it happens, working on impulse control, lots of mental stimulation with each other, bringing them out, making sure that they're going for heels, making sure they're going for walks, like, those are things that have to happen.
Indeed. The the work has to happen.
Yeah. But here, and I'm talking a lot, but I just want to be clear that the good thing about what your situation, again, is you haven't put gas in the engine that won't start. Meaning, like, you haven't even begun to create a healthy boundary type of situation in your house, like, and taking it seriously yet. So once you start doing that, you're going to see amazing changes. Like, you're going to see a big difference in the behavior of the dogs. You're going to see a big difference in your control, your confidence, the relationship. It's that structure that they need.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. You got to do the work.
Yeah. But it's like, it's not like, you know what's hard for me? I'll tell you what's hard for me. What's hard for me is when clients come to me and I have, you know, a whole thing of like things that dog owners have to do in order to create success over experiences and trial and error. It's hard when dog owners come to me and they've done it. This isn't rare. Or I mean, this is a rare thing, but it does happen, is when they've tried everything and it's still not working. That's hard. Cause I'm like, you know, you're running out of options here, but you haven't really begun the process to make things better. Which you'll see huge results. You're like, I'm cold. I'm like, hey, put on a jacket. You're like, oh, wow, I feel so much better, you know? So just understanding that these dogs may not like each other ever again, and your job is to make sure that they're healthy and at a healthy state where they can spend time with each other out on the leash with you and your family and whatever. That's cool. They shouldn't have any problems with that. But you have to understand that the more stimulation, the more you gas them up and the more you get them like worked up, they have nowhere to dump that. And they have now figured out that I'm going to just take all this out on the other dog. And sometimes this is just a simple case of redirection. That's all it is some dogs will redirect out of frustration to the other dog that's next to them because they don't know where to dump that energy. And the other dog just gets it. And you, as a dog owner, think it's a fight, and it's not. The other dog just doesn't know what else to do. We see this a lot with terriers. Terriers are very prey-driven, hunt-driven, chase and kill type of animals. That's why they were bred. Rat terriers, Jack Russell terriers, Scottish terriers, Wheaton terriers. I mean, these dogs are just killers. Pit bull terriers, etc. And they'll be out on a leash and they'll get really frustrated, maybe because they're reactive to other dogs or whatever. And they'll just go after the dog next to him and shake him. And, you know, you're freaking out. The other dog is freaking out, but it actually has nothing to do with their relationship. It's because the other dog just doesn't have any outlet of dumping that. And it's overlooked because you just see it as a fight when really I'm not saying that's what's happening. Just think about some of these blending things that could be happening. Because that could be a factor, you know?
Yeah, it makes total sense. All of it. And like you said earlier, probably, you know, the hearing some of the things that, makes total sense. But, need to do the work, need to kind of change it up, you know, how you think you're doing it right. But it's good to kind of have that different set of eyes. So
yeah.
I appreciate everything.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I have a kind of a different approach and different eye for things. And a lot of people like just think, oh, you know, my dogs are fighting and going after each other when, you know, it could be that, but it's also, I mean, there's reasons this is happening. So anyway.
Yeah. I guess the resource stuff, that was one thing, but, when they're playing, but it just escalates, or when they're
right
doing the other stuff, you I guess you're not in their head, so it doesn't make the same sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
When the frustration happens, because of course you.
It takes time. You just have to make sure that you're understanding that these. And this is the other thing too about like the difference between a professional and a pet owner. That's why it's hard. Like in New York State right now, in a lot of different states and different countries, people are trying to ban different dog training tools because they're dog lovers. They have no idea that they're going to be killing more dogs if they take away the tools that are helping behavior modification dog trainers work with those dogs who need them. You know, in the control, or even just, you know, a young female goes out and buys a St. Bernard and can't control him, and you ban a prong collar, and now she can't walk her dog anymore. So it comes down to emotion over facts and reality, and understanding that dogs are animals. They are killers. They can be killers, I should say. There's dogs that would rather just sleep on the couch all day, but these are dogs that will go out and just kill things, and they will eat rabbit poop, and they will roll in dead skunks, and they love us, and we have this empathy and this care for them, and I've dedicated my whole adult life to studying them and watching them, and I continue to learn every day from them. I've worked with wolves, I've worked with coyotes, I've worked with wolf dogs, I've worked with behavior dogs, I've worked with so many different classes of animals and canine world, that overall the thing that we need the most of is balance. Like dogs and canines in general don't do well with the freedom of doing whatever they want, and neither does most animals, and definitely humans don't. Like, we just, if we don't have structure, rules, boundaries, you know, there's got to be some sort of tax involved with like, hey, if this is what we got to do. And you got to remember that, yes, they're playing and they may like having a good time. And that's what's making you have a hard time with this, is you're thinking too emotionally. You're like, oh, they loved each other. And you're thinking of these two dogs, like two kids that were sitting around with Tinker Toys, like playing and having a good time, that you fostered both or you rescued both from a foster home or a bad situation in a different country. That's not these dogs. These dogs are just like, they're animals, and they will try to kill their other pack mate at any given time if for whatever reason they decide to change. And it's just, we get so caught up in trying to fix something that's never going to be fixed that we miss on the progress that we can make, the realistic progress that we can make. And I see that all the time, and it's, you know, I get it, right? Like, I love dogs. Like, I would, like, I, that's why I've been saying to my wife that, you know, I'd love another pet, because at the end of the day, I just want to like lay on the couch by the fire with a pet and just cuddle with and kiss on, and them just roll on their back and sit there for 5 minutes on their back with their floppy ears. I have a Dutch Shepherd. She's not that dog, you know? So I totally understand. And I'm not trying to say that I don't show signs of love and compassion towards animals like the pet owners I'm discussing and talking about. But I also, here's the balance. Here's the important part. I do understand what they're capable of, and I do understand what they can do. And that's what allows me to be successful in my career as well. Is somebody comes in, a family comes in, you call me and you're like, hey, I love my dogs. I'm like, I get that. I mean, I told you earlier in this conversation, you seem like a very nurturing, caring person. So I know it's hard for you to like, can't we just not fight anymore? Like, I wish that that was a thing, but you know, my job is to say, hey, look, I know you care. I know you love your dogs. They love you back, but they're savages. And now we have to say, okay, it's kind of like, if you can't play nice, you can't play at all. So now you guys are getting controlled more. There's more rules. There's more boundaries. It's just, now we have to buckle down, tighten up the bootstraps a bit, and make sure that these guys are successful. And like my friend Will says, leadership is love. And don't be afraid to give them more boundaries and structure to make their lives better and safer. Because again, dog owners, same thing with correcting. They're like, I don't want to correct my dog. I'm like, well, then don't complain about the behavior they're doing that you don't like.
Fair enough.
You know?
No, if I had a gazillion dollars, I would love to foster dogs and rescue.
Same.
No kill and all that good stuff. I just, I wish I was born on a farm and had that mentality. And I don't. I'm city girl that, you know, just la 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 with dogs and animals in general. And yeah, I need to wise up so that I can
just take
help
it
my own, let alone everybody else's.
Yeah, just take it more seriously and buckle down and don't be afraid to really make sure that they understand, like, hey, I love you guys, but tough love now. Like, and that starts with on the leash, like getting back down to control in general. You know, like every single person that comes into my facility that you see on my YouTube that has, you know, like, I mean, just watch my YouTube, like, unless it's a dangerous situation, and sometimes even then, they're like, hey, my dog has a bite history, my dog is reactive, my dog doesn't like anybody, my dog barks at everybody, you know, I hear it. I'm like, all right, let me see you work your dog. And they literally can't get their dog to sit. They can't get their dog to heal for 4 seconds. They can't do anything. I'm like, you guys, I get it, right? But you guys can't even do anything. Like, how are we going to work on this very advanced, complex behavioral relationship issue if your dog can't even do the alphabet? Like, I can't talk. I can't do any of this yet. So that's why I'm like, all right, first we're going to work on leash pressure. Then we're going to work on impulse control and thresholds, which means holding your dog accountable. When you say sit, the dog can't get up in 3 seconds because they got a cookie. The dog has to sit for 3 hours until you say, okay, break. That mentality right there is the reason why your dog is reactive. That mentality right there is the reason why your dogs are fighting, is because, again, if you have two dogs that don't like each other, but one, they're both really obedient, you can do anything. So just think about that. Like, you got to get back down to the ground rules. My No Bad Dog Kickstarter course may be really great for you. I don't know if you've looked into that or not, but it basically goes over the foundation of what dogs should know before you work on anything behavioral related. They have to know these things first. And it teaches you how to do thresholds and impulse control and the basics.
And that's online?
Yeah, it's on my website or on my, it's kind of interesting right now. For some reason, it's not on my normal website. But if you go to my, Linktree, which is Linktree/Tom Davis, or it's on my Instagram, you can just click my, my bio link. It's just under courses. Mm-hmm. But I created that course because so many people, like, my specialty is behavior. Like, I don't do puppy stuff. I don't do competitive obedience. I don't do that stuff. It's like, if you have a problem, I can probably help you. And I realized that so many people were calling me with these advanced problems, but they couldn't crawl. They're like, hey, I want to run the Boston Marathon with my, that's the ask that was happening. I want to run the Boston Marathon. You're the best trainer. But I haven't walked in years. And I'm like, what? I'm like, we got to start somewhere. And that course is like we're actually going to make sure that when people sign up for my online consulting, that they understand that the majority of the problems that they're dealing with can be solved or significantly helped by just watching how to do that course. It's basically just how to take over with your dog so they're not walking all over you, which is the reason why most dogs have behavioral problems. Ding, right there.
I like it.
It's a lot. Like it. My suggestion to you, let me give you homework. You ready?
I am.
Okay. Are they crated ever?
Just the last 3 days. Yeah, we put the crates away since they were puppies.
Okay, how are they doing in the crates?
Oh, fine.
Okay, so my suggestion is to work on the crating, like a crate and rotate often. What this does, so oftentimes people think that crating is a place for punishment, a place for when we leave, or a place for when we're eating dinner and we don't want the dog on the dinner table. The crate is one of those options that you can say, hey, you're going to go over here and you're going to be away from me for as long as I say. And the dog should just go. They need to learn how to deal with themselves. They need to learn how to be alone. I had a client that came in recently from my out-of-state program. And we have these little impact crates in my studio, which are awesome. And literally, like, I was like, let's just, and it was a small little Chihuahua dog. I said, let's just, has he ever been in a crate? She said, no. I said, let's go put him in the crate. We put him in there. And as she was walking away, she's like, well, is he going to be okay? I'm like, what do you, I was like, we're not putting him in the middle of Times Square. I'm like, he's fine. There's nothing going on in here. Well, is he going to be sad? I'm like, that's it. Like, that's the reason why your dog has these issues, is because you won't do the very basic thing of, like, you need to go be away from me for a little bit. So creating them will create this self-worth, self-confidence type of thing. It could be, and change it. Do it for 2 minutes. Do it for 30 minutes. Do it for 5 minutes. Just change it up. Hey, go to your crate. And it's, and again, the micro is your dog going into a crate that you know they're going to be safe in. The bigger picture is two things. Is when somebody comes over, or there's a stressful situation or a high stimulating situation that could happen or is happening, you can send your dog to a crate that will stop or halt any type of potential buildup between your dog and the other the two dogs, Max and Buddy. But it also just says, hey, I'm in charge. I want you to go to your crate. And the dog's going to be like, but dad's home, or but we're getting fed, or but the leash is out, whatever. You need to be able to just say, this is what you're doing. And sometimes you have to go back.
Is it correct if they get excited in that crate?
They can get excited in the crate. But here's the thing, is when you're letting them out, that door becomes the gatekeeper of, you can't get out of the crate until I release you.
Yeah.
Micro, macro. You kneel down to the crate. You open the gate. You should be able to say, stay. You open the door. The dog patiently just looks at you. And then you say, break. And then the dog comes out. But right now, what's probably happening is, you walk up towards the crate, the dog's going, the crate's going nuts, you know, pitter patter, spinning, whining, excited. And I don't know for sure. I'm just saying this is what typically happens, right? We open the crate door, the dog just barrels out. So you just want to make sure that you have that impulse control. Any time that you can use impulse control is a good muscle to exercise and flex to keep your dog in check. And you need to keep your dogs in check. They need to know that you are running the show. If your dogs are fighting actively multiple times in front of you, again, it's the same behavior that you would see two siblings fist fighting in front of their parents. No respect, no care in the world that they're going to get in trouble. And in fact, there is no trouble. There is no boundaries. There is no consequence. Like, if there was consequence, we wouldn't be doing this in front of you. You see what I'm saying? So you just got to start creating these boundaries. So putting the leash back on, holding them accountable for things. So put the leash on, Max, sit. He may sit, he may look for a treat. You can even pay him, good sit, boom. Holding that sit until you break him, it has to be on your terms. It's getting back down to, you don't just do, you have to ask for permission first. Hold my hand before we cross the road to go to Disneyland. I know what you want. I know you're done with this. You want to get there. You got to wait. Same thing with the food bowl. This is something you'll do separately, completely out of sight from the other dog. Put some food in a food bowl, put your dog into a sit, and then break your dog randomly to the food bowl. You're just going to walk around the food bowl. Sit, good sit, and then break the dog. You're constantly keeping the dog in check to make sure that you're kind of not teasing them, but you're providing them an opportunity of something they really want. Sometimes it's rushing out the front door. Sometimes it's rushing out of the crate. Sometimes it's hitting the kibble right when it hits the bowl. Sometimes it's, there's so many things that you just need to say, hey, pay attention to me. Okay, now you can have it. Right? That's what you want to do. Like, what's that?
I said, I absolutely right. That's where we're going to kind of get back.
But here's the important thing, okay? Don't miss this. Even if you're like, hey, we already do some of this stuff, if you're not holding the dog accountable, A, and B, switching up the routine or the exercise, it doesn't work. You're wasting your time. Because again, let me explain. Max sit. Max goes into a sit. You throw a piece of kibble. Max gets up. You put him back into a sit. You throw another piece of kibble. Max gets up. You put him back into a sit. You could do that until the sun disappears out of the universe. But if you're not correcting him so he learns not to get up unless there's consequences until you release him when you throw the food, it doesn't matter. So that's important, because a lot of people, what I'm telling you right now is in your head, you're like, oh, we do this, but you do it off leash or whatever. Like, you have to make sure that the dog is getting held accountable and there's a consequence for blowing you off and just doing whatever they want. That's the deal. The other thing is making sure that when you're doing any of these thresholds and stuff, that you're switching it up. You don't want to do like, oh, again, like you said, like we do this raw food routine for the last 2 years, switch it up. Like, make the dog go into a different place, make the dog go into a down, make the dog sit in a random place in the house. Just make sure like that you are switching up your variables to make sure the dogs are sharp and they're listening to you and they're not in a routine. Because routines don't, I mean, it's good to have, it's nice, especially for a dog without any behavioral problems. Like my dog, like she goes to her crate when I get the food out. Cool. If I was having a problem in our relationship, I would be, again, she goes to her crate, I'd say, come, she'd come to me, I'd say touch, I'd say down, I'd say sit, I'd say come, down, sit, I'd go put her food in her crate, I'd recall her off the crate, I would do all these different things, and then I'd send her to a crate to make sure, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, okay, here's your reward, see you later. That's what you need
to
do.
I'd have to clean the floor 50 times.
Say it again?
I'd have to clean the floor 50 times. Max has the Bernese, so he's
drooling all over the place. Do it outside. Yeah, you could do it outside too, or you know, in the driveway. Like that's what I'm saying. Is like don't make your get creative. I want you to make your world big. Like go bring Max out on a leash and on a walk and do this. Like bring kibble. Bring you know, if you're doing cooked meals in the morning, put it in a treat pouch, put it in a bag, then put it in a treat pouch and go out and make him work for his entire food outside. You just want to make sure you have control. You're like, hey, okay, fine. Hey, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, you guys don't like each other anymore? Tough cookies. You're living with each other and you're going to listen to me. You don't have to cuddle. You don't have to kiss. You don't have to sleep on the couch together, but you are not going to fight each other because I'm in charge and that's what matters. Right now, you need to enforce that. That's not happening. You need to do it on a daily to make sure these dogs that live with you, these animals that live with you, understand regardless of their feelings towards each other, you are in charge. And there's consequences for going after each other. And there's consequences for not listening. And you're pressing that hard to make sure that they know that.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, see? That's the spirit. So work on that. And then, you know, next steps for you again, you could do this again with me. But my suggestion at a cheaper route is to get the No Bad Dog Kickstarter course, which goes over my principles of like, hey, every dog should know these things before you even complain about behavioral work. And also it goes over the things I'm saying, like reinforcing the thresholds and doing sit and stay and all that stuff. So anyway,
I'm looking at that and I appreciate it, and I appreciate you.
Okay.
Every time.
No problem. That's what I
thank you so much. This is such a, I mean, it really, it's an honor to speak with you, and I thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you, you know, and I appreciate it just as much because, you know, I want to help dogs. And the fact that you can call me or I can call you and then I can give you the information to help your dogs, it's all I care about. So I appreciate it just as much.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. Good
all
luck.
All the best to you and your beautiful family. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yo, guys, you've reached the, I wanted to change it up from, all right, you guys, you reached the end of the podcast, but yeah, you did. You reached the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I personally, like, I love clients like this. She knows she needs help. She knows that she can do it. She wants to hang on to her dog. She wants these guys to be successful. She seems like such a nice person. And so I think, you know, again, like the relationship between her and I feel like there was so much good information going into this podcast because she just allowed me to continue to build her up. All right, you guys, the first question comes from CS0261, Littermates, 5-star review. I have just started listening to your podcast and I'm so excited. I love how much emphasis there is on the person rather than the dog. It really makes me rethink everything I'm doing. The question is that I have two German Shepherd puppies that are both 7 months old. I've had them since they were 5 weeks old. Guys selling them obviously didn't care about them. I've been working with them separately, training them separately with the clicker, but I'm struggling a bit because I'm using their food for training first, then treats after they finish. They're daily food, but they aren't very food driven at all. Very toy driven, high prey drive. How can I train them with such low food drive? I think I answered this last podcast, but I'll answer it again. When you have a low food drive dog, just use a toy, like use a ball, like create. I do want to make a video on how I did a video recently with this German Shepherd, but I'm pretty sure I answered this last time, so forgive me, guys who are listening. But I'll just talk about it a little bit because it'll be different for you guys. Is just create very, very, very controlled impulse control with the ball. Everyone gets a ball or a toy out, and they immediately hold it up in the air, and the dog jumps for it. Get your leash on your dog. Get the ball or whatever you're using out. And then as soon as your dog goes for it, correct him. Say, no, that's not yours. Like, I can hold the ball right in Lakota's nose. She won't touch it until I break her. That's the control you want. Get your dog worked up. Like, go to my Instagram and look at the video I did with Kite, the German Shepherd that I used the long line with. Start working on that. And then build your dog up with that control. And that's a great way to use, like, you don't have to use treats. Treats are helpful, but that's what I would do. Just get a ball. Get him working on that. The Herm Springer balls that we have on our website are amazing. I would suggest that. All right, guys, that's a good one. Here comes another one. Dragon Wings 121. Excellent podcast, Tom. I want to thank you for your podcast. It has saved my dog. I have worked hard on what you've talked about in your podcast with advice you give other owners with aggressive dogs. It's helped my family and my dog's relationship in my family. I'm still tentative about bringing him around my elderly father, not because he's done any bad behaviors over a year, but because I'm still hesitant to bring him over to my father's house. I believe I am overreaching. I want to give you a heartfelt thank you. I love dogs and I love my dog. So when he bit another person and me in my house, I didn't have the heart to stop trying with him. I had an injury that had me off work for a few months, but put some quality work in with him to show him love. I think the most significant difference came when I wouldn't allow him on the bed and became very strict with enforcing bad behaviors that wouldn't be allowed. He is now loving. He is a lot more loving, and he's flowered around humans and strange contact. I haven't pushed a stranger on him just in case. I used the muzzle with him, and I don't believe it necessarily anymore. He had been in a puppy mill, and a friend gave him to me. So, I can't say this enough. They've changed. I appreciate it so much from every angle. Great. It's rewarding. Yeah. So thank you so much. My dog is now living. There's a lot more to this, but it's just a great review. My dog is loving, obedient dog now. So it's amazing. Let's get on to the next one. Juno ML, my 7-month-old puppy is Benji and part American Staff Terrier. I wanted to educate myself on her breeds, tendencies, needs, but I'm struggling to find what information. Where do you recommend looking into breeds? Good question. What I would do is, I mean, if I were you, I mean, I'm just thinking on the fly, I would just go to try to find Facebook groups. Or just groups in general. I think Facebook's like a decent place to find like those very specific groups. But that's what I would do, is like find groups, find clubs that are like working with these dogs, and just try to figure out what other people are doing, the success that they have. That's my best piece of advice. So it's a good question, and that's what I would recommend. So wish you the best of luck for that. All right, let's get into the next one. We're going to do one more, and then I have to go to my members club and do a live with them. Ryan Bricks, Car Reactivity. Hey, Tom, I've enjoyed your podcast and have added it to my training tool belt when it comes to our boy Moose. Moose is an abused rescue Sharpei and Bloodhound mix and a whole lot of love. Need I say more? We have come a long way with our sweet 2-year-old boy. The training never stops. Our newest challenge is car reactivity. He now gets very anxious when we drive past farms, especially cows and horses. We have tried the e-collar, doggy seatbelt, treats, corrections, but nothing has worked. We purchased the reactivity spray. It seems to scare him, so he stops barking. We have tried to desensitize him to cows and horses, but nothing has helped. It's like he tries to track them, and he lets out a bloodhound bay in the car. He knows commands quite well. I don't know. This is a weird situation. Ryan, my suggestion is to literally continue to I'd be desensitizing. I would go and park that car next to a farm and work on this for a long period of time. That's the only way I think you're going to get better is to desensitize it. So if you're just driving by, think about the accumulative time that you've actually spent on the dog working on that particular thing, which is very little. right? You're driving by, which is like 30 seconds, 10 seconds, from what you've told me, from what I understand in the context. I would go park that sucker as close as you can to, you know, a farm and start working on it. Make sure you're just rewarding the dog when they do good. And for me, I just think the next step once they do well is to get out of the car and then just keep making it better and just keep teaching the dog that these animals in these situations are okay. I'm assuming it's a, you know, maybe an abuse case from a farm situation. I don't know. All right, next one, Olivia Bonner. This is actually the last one, guys. So make sure if you guys are listening to this and you want me to answer your questions, head over to the iTunes review chart because I'm out of questions for the first time in a long time. All the trainers that I've taken my Husky mix to are positive reinforcement only. They have never held the dog accountable, which is great if your dog always listens. That's a good, decent, valid point. But Huskies don't always listen. Not every dog always listens. I don't know a dog that does that. Anyway, he is 1 year old Husky, and I've taken him to group class where I've been told to only walk him on a harness, but I showed up with a prong collar because that's how I know he will actually listen to me. I love your videos and the combination of the group classes and your videos, and my dog is happily well-trained. Thank you, and I'm happy that my dog is better. I'm a leader for my dog. Amazing. Love it. All right, you guys, thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time. See you on tour. Let's do it. Woo! Bye.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.